Well, it sure is. And we're going to take your phone calls now with Bishop James Long on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. I'm George Norrie, Archbishop James Long. Your phone calls, and I shall not discuss the Ouija board anymore until the night of Wednesday, July 25th, whatever it may be. And don't forget the Fire the Grid coming up now in 3 hours and 6 seconds. So you get ready for that, the mass consciousness there. Let's go to the phones. You ready, Bishop?
Absolutely.
East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. Thanks a lot. This is Bud from Chicago.
Hey, Bud.
Archbishop, I would like to know, why is it these demons will enter one home and try to possess a person, whereas they'll stay away from another home or person?
That's a great question. I think a lot of that has to do with susceptibility. I think depending on, for example, my home, I do nothing. Or very rarely do I, well, I guess I shouldn't say that. I am an exorcist. But I try to limit opening myself up to the possibilities of receiving any type of demonic possession. So obviously my home is blessed. I have several relics. I do have a cross in every room. And so I think obviously it's a little more complicated, whereas demons are cowards. And so they like to pick on victims that sometimes might not be able to fight off as much as they want. Because remember, the purpose of the demon is to destroy a soul. They don't care what soul. They just want to destroy the soul.
Have you ever seen a demon, sir?
Well, certainly when I did the exorcism, I saw face to face with a possessed person.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Bud. Appreciate you being part of the program. First time caller, line your turn. Where are you calling from?
This is Adam from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Hi, Adam. Go ahead.
I was wondering if have you like heard about like possessed items like toys or you know clocks or whatever items that would possess people or not be possessed people but affect homes and certain things.
Absolutely, and George and I were speaking about that earlier regarding. The sell of certain items that took place during the real exorcism of Robbie,
mm-hmm.
The young boy, the movie's made of, the exorcist movie. And yeah, many reported actually poltergeist activity. So that's something, you know, if that's something I would try to stay away from. But absolutely, any type of energy source, any type of source, for example, and not necessarily maybe. May not be demonic force. Like, for example, let's say you have a child and they have a favorite toy. Well, that might be a residual haunting where the toy is moving, and it's constantly playing out. The child is playing with the favorite toy. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's a demonic force.
But they do seem to attach themselves to things, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, certainly do.
East of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
I was actually calling because I have dreams about demon possession, and I don't know if I've been having a battle of, like, because I grew up Catholic, and I have, like, a battle going on between, like, being born-again Christian or staying with the Catholic teachings, and I'm just wondering if these dreams of, like, demon possession has anything to do with that.
As far as you being possessed, or
no, just like maybe it's like trying to weaken me or
break you down.
Yeah, I guess you would call that.
Oh, I certainly believe that. I think spiritually, you know, this is we're certainly in a spiritual warfare. I think anything that a demonic force can do to break you down, they will do it.
Right.
Certainly in dreams is one way in which they do. And that's why before I go to sleep at night, I always pray to God to protect me and protect my family, St. Michael, Archangel. And so I go to bed peacefully because of that, because I do know that I believe strongly that I'm being supported by angels.
Right. Okay.
Have you ever gotten prophecy at all with any of this that you do, James?
Yes, for example, the Ouija board situation, through prayer, As I said, yes, I have, and that's why I needed to tell you that I think that by you doing this, you're gonna have emails of people calling you, or you might have phone calls saying, look, this is what happened. So yes, I have had several things, but I try to tune those out.
All right, next up, let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hello there. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
My name's Robin.
Go ahead, Robin.
Okay, I was making sure it was me because I was hearing everybody else.
Yeah, well, make sure your radio's turned down.
It is turned down.
Okay.
When I was a child, well, there's been a lot of haunting-type things and poltergeist-type things throughout my family on both sides. And as a child, my mother, she is very open to a lot of things and believes in things very easily. And we lived in Puerto Rico, and she got a book on automatic writing because there were a few books in English at that time that she could find to read. And she thought it sounded interesting. Then when she read it, she thought, well, maybe I could do this. And automatically she started doing it. It just started happening. And page after page after page after page. And when I was about 10, she finally showed it to me. And I always felt scared. We lived in a house that was like 100 years old or over. And I always felt afraid. And when she showed it to me, it scared me so badly that, you know, I had nightmares from it. And she prayed finally. She believed in God very much. She prayed finally in her room and unceasingly, saying, I will not stop until I get an answer. And she had page and pen in front of her. And God, she asked God, is this from you or is this from Satan? And an evil smell came into the room, and her hand started writing. It says, oh, where would you say this is coming from? Something like that. And she said something evil, you know. And then the smell went away, and this beautiful smell came in the room. And he says, who would you say that I am? And she didn't even know that from the Bible, that scripture. And she said, I would say that something good, God. And then the smell went away, and it wrote again, asking Jesus' name for it to leave, and it has to leave. And she did, and the presence went away. But shortly afterwards, some lady came and asked her to pay her to do this again, to automatic write. And she really didn't want to do it, but she said, okay. And she prayed first for protection. And my little sisters, they have twins, they were about four, were outside with a couple other kids about their same age playing. We had a huge, huge, huge yard. And as my mother was beginning to do this, the twins and the other two ran in the house hysterical, and they had to calm them down before they'd speak. And when they spoke, they said that they saw this large being that with wings that were, it was like huge and bright and white clothing to the ground and bare feet and big wings that went to the ground and long hair that long blonde flowing hair that almost touched her feet, and just smiling at them. And they came in hysterical saying what they saw, and all four of them saw it. And one of my little sisters at 15 saw the same being again.
It doesn't sound evil.
Huh?
Doesn't sound evil.
Well, but what about the automatic writing? My mother showed it to me.
Well, that could have been something entirely different, James, don't you think?
Yeah, automatic writing, from what I understand, it's basically it's writing material that doesn't come from the conscious thoughts of the writer. It's basically many times the writers they're not even aware of their surroundings, but they are aware of the actions of the hands. Now, Freud, I believe, Freudian psychology used this in self-knowledge studies, so it kind of gaining insight into the subconscious. The problem with using it from a religious aspect is, once again, we're opening up the channel for the possibility of something evil coming through. So it's certainly there. George, you talked earlier about where are the angels?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it sounds like in this situation we had a battle between angelic forces and demonic forces. And so it sounds like there was clearly something there, a battle going on to me.
Next up, let's go to our next wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
George.
Yeah.
Hi, it's Jack from Santa Cruz, KSCO 10A.
Sure, Jack, California.
Oh, guys, I'll tell you, I am personally aware of an entity that has been plaguing mankind for centuries. I mean, that is solely responsible for more human suffering through the ages than any other entity at all. And just has treated human beings like cattle, like parasites, like slime molds, hacked them to bits, burned them, tortured them, stole their property, destroyed entire nations of primitive people. Do you know the entity I'm talking about?
No, but I have a feeling I'm going to find out.
Yeah, the Catholic Church.
The old Catholic Church.
The Catholic Church.
Well, I'm old Catholic.
I didn't mean by the old Catholic. I mean, this did happen a long time ago.
Sure, absolutely.
My friend, no doubt about that.
It's still going on.
Well, we know some of the problems, don't we?
Yes, we do. Oh, George, on a lighter note, I tried to look up. I remember you saying earlier today, this evening, about the murder rate. And I thought you said 35,000.
No, I said 23,000.
Oh, 23. Now, I have it right in front of me. For 2005, it's 14,860. Now, in 2006, the totals aren't in yet, but it's supposed to be 3.3% higher in the large cities. So I suppose it's a little bit bigger, higher than that. So I just wanted to give that to you. I came across the most fascinating statistic while I was looking at this. More people are killed in the United States every day by illegal aliens than are dying over in Iraq. 12 a day. 12 murders of Americans by illegal aliens every day. Just thought I'd throw that in.
Seems kind of inconsistent, doesn't it?
George, you have such an opportunity to bring light to millions of people through your privileged position.
Well, you know, Jack, that's why they call me the worker in the light, which is not a bad title to have, James. Thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello?
George?
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Sean from Santa Barbara.
Yeah, Sean, sure.
Okay, this is about Sylvia Plath and a ghost. I was at the Bella Majora in Ventura, room 17. There's a ghost, supposedly, named Sylvia, a prostitute that hung herself.
Sylvia.
And you can smell roses. Well, I've been there many times and had a lot of experiences with Sylvia. Then I met a woman, she goes, this sounds more like Sylvia Plath. So I started doing research of Sylvia Plath. Sylvia Plath was deeply into the Ouija board. Her father was Otto Plath, supposedly the underworld. She wrote poems about Colossus. And if you look in this book called The Rough Magic, you can see many pictures of her. She looks different. So like the father was saying about schizophrenia, there's a borderline schizophrenia and possession because she has different faces. So beware of that Ouija board. I'm really concerned about that.
Okay, and like I said, I'm not going to talk about the Ouija board until Wednesday. I'm Ouija'd out. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hey, this is Chris from Springfield, Missouri.
Hey, Chris, go ahead.
One last question about Ouija board, and then you can go to rest on it.
Promise?
If I'm just chilling out at the house and listening to your program, is there a possibility something could happen to me? Like, I don't believe, like, I'm a strong Christian guy, and, like, I don't believe that something could happen to me, but...
Okay, Bishop, he's just sitting there listening to the show that night. What happens to him?
It's quite possible that something actually could happen. Understand that when you're using energy, exerting energy as you will be doing on the radio show, if there is a demonic force that does come through, the manipulation of the digital lines or the airwaves can occur. So even if someone is not playing with the Ouija board along with you, they could actually see something occur, poltergeist material occur. It's quite possible, only because not only are you opening the possibility of this communication up, but they are as well by listening to you.
You know, when you were talking about that dog that went from being a beautiful family pet to a little Cujo-like.
Sure.
What was the breed?
It wasn't
a Rottweiler or anything like
it
that.
It was a Rottweiler.
It was.
Yeah.
That's like the Omen. Wasn't that a dog? Wasn't that a Rottweiler, the Omen? I think it was.
I'm not for sure. I honestly don't know.
The original one. Yeah, I think it was.
I'm not for sure. It's been such a long time since I've seen that movie. I don't know which one. I know this was a smaller Rottweiler, but she was a big dog.
Let's go wild card line time. You're up. Hello there.
Hey, George, this is Jeff out of Louisville, Kentucky.
Hey, Jeff, not too far from Waverly Hills, huh?
Oh, yes, I have been there before at night, and it is quite creepy, and I hope that you do a show there one day. I think it would be worth it, especially, you know, Halloween time of year.
I'm staying out of room 502.
There you go. Well, hey, I just wanted to throw that out, and I hope your guest doesn't take any offense to this, George, but I have to say I've never heard of St. Christopher's old Catholic church there in Louisville, and I looked in the phone book. I couldn't find him, no offense or anything, but there is a St. Anthony's, I believe, Orthodox, like the Greek or Russian Orthodox there in Louisville. I've been there before. On a field trip, I am Roman Catholic, and I was also one of the ones who was in the big faith circle, but I never heard of the church he has.
All right, how does he find you, Bishop?
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for asking that. We actually have an agreement with the local Lutheran church, and so we use Calvary Lutheran Church. It's located on 1838 Bardstown Road. We have liturgy at every Saturday at 5 p.m. The reason is you're not finding us in the phone book because in the phone book it's $500 a month to place an ad there. And so because we're independent from Rome and we're autonomous, $500 a month for a small community such as ours would just not be feasible.
Ah, okay. Well, hey, and
just put it in the white pages. That's free, isn't it, or a couple bucks?
It is actually, well, see, they're very...
You don't have to take out a Yellow Pages ad.
They're very complicated here, and we were actually, we talked to the phone people about that, but they had said that you can put an ad or a small, just a listing, which that's what we're going to do. They've already printed the new ones out, but that's eventually what we're going to be doing. But, the ads are just it's ridiculous.
You think they would donate it to a church?
Well, you know, the problem is they get so many requests for that. They just, you know, it's a business, and they say no.
You know, the other caller called about the atrocities of the Catholic Church, the ongoing and past, of course, and, you know, here in Los Angeles.
Sure.
The archdiocese here is settling for $600-plus million with the abused people who were children at the time. And, you know, when that happens, and it's happening all around this country and probably all around this world, you know, people are going to start thinking about organized religion, at least the Catholic religion, in a different way. They are literally destroying people's mindset about the Catholic Church, James.
You know, I firmly, there's no excuse for any bishop or cardinal to ever cover up sexual abuse from a child. And that's one thing, a problem I had with the seminary. We were talking about confessions, and one priest said that, and the seminary said that if a child comes to you and says, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned, for I've been molested by my father," you can't say anything.
Where are they getting that kind of money? From Rome? Or do they have that here in the coffers?
It's insane. I told the priest, I said, "Well, then you're no better than the person who's committed the crime. You know, how dare you not step up and help this poor child who tells you, I have a problem, and you don't do anything
about it." Yeah, I know it. We'll be back in a moment. Warren Demons and the rest of your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Craig Hines joins us. He, too, is a paranormalist, and we're going to be talking about ancient manuscripts, the Nephilim, stargates, and how EVP sounds support some things that have happened in antiquity. It's kind of a neat show. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final segment now with Archbishop James Long and the rest of your phone calls. How do you protect yourself, Bishop, from getting attacked when you perform these exorcisms?
Well, first of all, when you go in, you perform the exorcism, you need to understand that an attack can occur at any time. It's a very vulnerable situation that you place yourself in. Through faith
And through having other people as a support group, it certainly does help. The biggest thing when you're performing an exorcism is not to discuss things with the demon. It's not to have a conversation. The only thing that you want to know is the name. And that is for the control.
The name of the demon.
The name of the demon. And that is why you need to control. And that's why the demon probably 9 times out of 10 will not tell you or lie. And so once you get the name of the demon, you know who you're dealing with, because there are hierarchies of demons. So if you're dealing with a higher hierarchy of satanic or a diabolical possession, which is the devil, versus demonic possession, which is the demons, you're dealing with something completely different. And so the battle could be quite fierce. And so depending on who what has possessed this individual, that will determine what you need to do or what the steps are. So not engaging in conversation, not listening, not just demanding that the devil pays attention to you, demanding that, as you in persona Christi is, denouncing the devil's presence and compelling the demon to leave the person. That's the best way, is to deny the person the power of the demon.
All right, back to the phones we go. Wildcard Line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, well, you tell me. You called.
Hey, what's going on, George?
Yes, sir.
How you doing, Bishop?
Hi.
I just have a simple question. Is the demonic activities increasing because of the end times getting near?
Good question.
And also, how effective is the armor of God? I understand you said that there's danger in getting attacked. Would having the armor of God on, as in Ephesians, decrease the attack, and how effective is that?
Oh, great, fantastic questions. I tell you, yes, you have some really scholarly folks out there, George.
Bishop, let me tell you something. If one is not prepared every night, they'll get you.
That's true. Great questions. You know, there's a lot of debates on the end times. I think it's clear to me, and it was clear to Father Malachi as well, as the demonic possession has increased, that he even argues it has increased 800% since the 1970s. I would say that the end times, if you look around, it's pretty clear that we could be very much living in those times. As far as the God, the armor of God, every time I walk into a situation, whether it be a blessing, blessing of a home, blessing of an animal, or an exorcism, I thank God every day for giving me the protection, His protection, the protection of the angels as I walk into the pit of hell. And so, yes, the armor of God, I think, and that's a great question, I think that is what keeps me from possession.
All right, let's go next to our West of the Rockies line. Hi there. Hello? Hello?
George?
Are you there?
George?
Well, we're going to have to move on. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hey, George, this is John in Houston.
Hey, John, thanks for calling.
No problem. I had a question for the bishop, I believe.
Okay.
I think that my brother may have unwittingly caused an, I believe the term is infestation in my house.
Yeah.
He is a practicing member of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, of which Aleister Crowley was also a member.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that order?
I'm not familiar with that order.
Okay. Well, it was started by Israel Regardie and Aleister Crowley, yeah. I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But he does a lot of dealings with spirits, invoking what he calls the Enochian angels, and a whole bunch of other spiritual realms that he seems to invoke. And I've been experiencing some weird things in my house now, so I live with him. And one of the things that you mentioned was the foul smell. And in my kitchen, I don't know when it started, but all of a sudden there's been this really, really foul smell. Can't really describe it. But it's been there for a while, and we wash and we move stuff, and nothing removes the smell. I hang rosaries in my room because I suffer from night terrors, and I just feel safer with the rosaries there, and they've all broken.
And I guess you have to weigh, James, whether there's like a dead mouse in the wall too, right?
Most certainly. Usually, the smell will. It usually starts out with the smell of gas. Or the smell of rotten flesh. Primarily, all the files that I have read always said the smell is of rotten flesh. One thing, let me ask the caller, if you don't mind, are the rosaries blessed?
Yes, the rosaries are blessed.
And that's through a priest?
Yes.
And you say they're broke?
Yeah, I hang them on thumbtacks on the wall, just over my bed, and the chains just all broke and the beads scattered everywhere. And my room is very clean. No one goes in except for myself. So it's not like something has hit it and tore the beads or anything. I just came home from work one morning, and, no one's in my room. I looked beads all over the floor, and they're just broken.
Well, my advice obviously would be to keep a solid prayer life, to make sure that ask for prayers, ask for protection from the archangels.
All right.
And I think you'll be just fine. Now, I'm concerned about several of the things that are occurring, especially the broken rosaries and the foul smell. But what time usually are these? Is there a certain time that you're hearing anything else, like scratches, bangs, noises, disembodied voices?
No, I'm not hearing any of that. Like I said, the night terrors that I have, I don't know if that's related. The foul smell.
What do you mean?
I'm sorry?
How do you define night terrors? What's going on?
Okay, well, I'll be asleep. I will have laid down to go to sleep, and then I wake up abruptly, and I cannot move, and I see what I now believe to be shadow people from listening to the show. I'm not sure what they are, but just dark figures. I feel like I'm in peril. My chest feels tight. One time I called out to my father. You know, I didn't say the Lord's name or anything. I said, "Father, help me," and the image of Jesus appeared by my bedside. And immediately I could move and breathe better. But So they might be dreams, but to me, I swear I'm awake.
It's interesting because when you said that, I just got chills in my body.
Well, wait a minute. If you get chills, we're all in trouble, Bishop.
Well, because there are several things that you said there that I didn't like. So.
Oh, great.
I think what you need to do is keep a solid prayer life. That's very important.
All right.
And use holy water, I think blessing the home would be certainly something that you might want to do. And also keep an eye on what time these occurrences happen. A lot of times demonic possession or hauntings that are evil will occur usually around 3 a.m. The reason being is because that is that's a way of demons mocking Christ, because Christ suffered, he died on the cross at 3 p.m. And so usually those things will occur at 3 a.m.
James, have you heard people try to put sage around them, around their house and...
Yeah, I've heard of that. I'm going to put more energy and more emphasis on images of Christ. And that's what I use. Sage is something that's an old belief that it keeps the demons away. But for me personally, what I use, I don't use sage. I simply bless the house with holy water, and I have crosses on every single room.
Okay, good. Thanks. Let's go next to our wild card line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Oh, hey, that's me. Good morning.
Hey, me. Go ahead.
Well, it's Carolyn from New York City.
Okay.
Hey, I just wanted to kind of first share a little theory I have on demonic possession, and then tell you something that happened to me kind of when I was waking up from a dream. First, you know the way... Physically, a toxic body has a weak immune system, which makes it more difficult for you to fight off, you know, the viral infections and stuff. I think that, you know, someone who has mental or spiritual toxicity, that would also give them, you know, difficulty in, you know, fighting off, you know, demonic infections, you know, instead of possession, maybe, you know, infection is an easier word to, you know, understand. And, you know, that being said, though, you know, people who have toxic bodies, that really influences their mental, you know, disposition and, you know, depression, irritability and obsession and fear-based thoughts. Those are all, you know, classic symptoms of a toxic body. Kind of to segue into what happened to me, one morning, when I was kind of in that twilight, you know, where you're conscious but not, you know, you're still kind of in that sleep paralysis. Like a griffin, I don't know what you would call it, you know, a little winged creature kind of, you know, sat on my chest, and I got really kind of scared, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to have to really, you know, fight this thing off. But I, you know, was able to just kind of flick it off like a fly, you know, and then I woke up and, you know, kind of, you know, wondered what that was about. So I was wondering if you'd ever, you know, heard of, you know, things like that with other people, or...
As far as the winged creatures?
Yeah, or something like that. And, you know, just that... I know you said before that, you know, they're not really that strong, you know, if you, you know, have some spiritual immunity, I guess. You know, I was kind of surprised that I was able to, you know, just flick it off just like a, you know, unwanted bug or something.
Yeah, I think that's, I think that's, you know, as far as the winged creature in your dream, there's a...
Sounds like Mothman, James.
Yeah, sounds like an idea for a different show there. I would say probably, being that that was a dream, and obviously there might be some problems that you might be having in your life that you're struggling with, as far as and obviously the creature symbolizing that, and you're flicking it off trying to deal with it. I would say that's probably a bit different than seeing someone fully possessed and seeing. This possessed person face-to-face.
Now, the clock's going to get us soon, so let's take as many more as we can. Wild card line, go ahead.
Hi, this is Bradley from Nashville.
Hey, Bradley.
I have a question. Supposedly, there are 7 levels of the astrolabe of planet Earth. James, from which level do demons come, if that's applicable?
As far as the... All the demons, as far as the levels you're talking about, as far as the hierarchy of the demonology, is that what you're asking?
Correct.
Well, there's several, actually, arguments as far as the levels of demonology. And that can get into a huge, huge discussion. I think, I hate to take so much time, but that's a tough one. Like Lucifer, Leviathan, the Satan, Belphegor, Mammon, Beelzebub. I mean, it depends on what exactly... You're asking as far as the...
Well, level. What level of these 7 planes that are on the astral plane, there's different levels. 7 of them we all hear. Are these demons, James, at certain levels?
As far as hierarchies, most certainly. Absolutely. And I think when you're talking about the first hierarchy, the second hierarchy, the third hierarchy, in each plane that you're talking about, the several planes that you're talking about, the higher the plane, the higher the hierarchy. And so at least that's the belief, that's the theory. There are some people who may disagree with that. Obviously, the first hierarchy being the most, or the highest plane, being the most severe of demons. Does that make sense?
I don't know. I'm having trouble following you on that one myself.
It's hard to explain. When you're talking about the 7... the specific question is the specific plane.
Yeah, what level do these demons come from? Are they on all of them?
Oh, most certainly. I don't know anybody who would think that they wouldn't.
Okay, well that's it. I mean, we've heard different things on that. I mean, it's probably something that you just, you know, aren't really aware of. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Adam calling from Peoria.
Hi, Adam. Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a comment about that sanatorium you guys were talking about.
Yeah, Waverly.
Yeah, there was actually a movie that came out on DVD within the last year or so that was called Death Tunnel. And I believe it was the writer and director was from the area and was inspired from the stories to shoot this movie. And the interesting thing about the movie is if you watch the bonus features on the DVD, they actually caught EVPs and shadow people while they were filming the movie.
Well, that's just what the Archbishop is saying. The shadow people are everywhere out there.
Yeah, like I said, on the bonus features on the DVD, they show several different shadow people, and I guess they had several shots ruined by EVPs cutting into the cameras.
James, have you gotten EVP sounds out there?
Oh, yes, absolutely I have. Yeah, we've gotten several planes. She's not on that planes. Several voices that I have. None that were violent. Just more of a little girl crying, I got that.
I hate those little kid sounds like that, don't you? They're chilling.
I do, yeah. They're somewhat scary. Yeah. They'll wake you up.
Where are you, Mommy? I like those.
Those are the worst.
First time caller line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Hey, very happy, excited. I'm going to skip all the niceties, just insert whatever niceties you can towards yourself and the bishop.
All right, you got it.
And let's roll, okay? First off, I was a very spiritual person at one time. Just thinking about this stuff and hearing the conversations and seeing how a lot of my thoughts are in line with what the bishop's talking about, what you guys are talking about, what callers have talked about. I feel a spiritual connection towards this stuff.
You said that one time, though. Something happened.
Well, right now I feel a spiritual connection I haven't had in a long time, and that feels good. And I'm like, wow, that's good. I remember having these feelings before. But, yeah, while Metco, I was pretty religious. I was trying to be a large part of my born religion that I was born into. And I can relate to really having been very spiritual or feeling very connected to the spiritual realm, feeling connected to the good spiritual realm of feeling God's love and feeling protected by whether it's angels or just God, you know, protecting me because I was exercising my faith. But also the other side of that, of one experience, one night, it happened at night, sleeping, I had this horrible dream of just being overcome by just something really dark and spiritual, and it was just dark, and it held me, and it was just, I couldn't do nothing, I couldn't speak, and I woke up, and I still felt that way, and I tried saying something, help me, Lord, help me, God, help me, Jesus, and I couldn't. And then when I finally was able to do that, the situation departed. Now, I've had both of those experiences. Over the past couple of years, I've kind of fallen away from my faith. I've turned from it.
Well, you've got to find it, some kind of faith. The clock has got us here, Archbishop James. Thanks for being on the program, and maybe I'll get up to Waverly Hills, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, do yourself a favor. Definitely do that.
We'll see if we can do a show out of there one day to see if we can technically link things up. I mean, those spirits might cut the lines. You never know. Okay, for Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smithy, and Punnett Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.